You're listening to Uniquely Beautiful Stories with Heather McAneer, a place for you to find encouragement to fully live your uniquely beautiful life.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to the Uniquely Beautiful Stories podcast. I'm your host, Heather McAneer, and I'm so glad you're tuning in. I want to thank you for joining us each week as we bring you stories of redemption and beauty in hopes that you will find encouragement to go out and fully live your own uniquely beautiful story. This podcast is brought to you by Cedar Creek Dental Associates. If you are near Oklahoma City looking for quality dental care, be sure to check out their website at okcsmile.com. I promise you'll find an amazing staff and top-notch dental care to keep you smiling for years to come. Also, if this podcast has been an encouragement to you, it would mean the world to me if you would subscribe, give us a review or a rating, and pass along the link to this episode to a friend. This is really the only way other women will be encouraged by these uniquely beautiful stories, so thanks so much for sharing the love. Today's guest is a woman I've known for a while. Her name is Claire Westbrook. And Claire is wife to Colt, mom of three, Duke, Nova, and Veda. She's a singer-songwriter, and you can find clips of her music on her Instagram at Claire Westbrook. And we're going to link to all of this in the show notes. So don't have a wreck if you're driving and you're trying to write this down. We'll put it out there for you. She's also an occasional blogger at mydevising.com. And I know you're going to be so encouraged to check out Claire's work, her words, and this interview is going to really be an encouragement to you. Let's get to know her a little bit here. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This is so fun. It is so fun. I was thinking this morning how long I've actually known you, and I can't really remember like an exact first meeting. Actually, our mothers and our grandmothers knew each other.
Yeah. So it is weird how far back our family history goes.
It's very crazy. Really, but I remember, so my husband, Garrick, and I, we used to work in the middle school ministry at our church, and that was before we were married, and then we kind of phased out of that once we were married, but Claire was in that middle school ministry.
Mm-hmm. The shack.
In the shack. Oh, yeah. Yes. And you guys actually kind of watched our whole relationship, like, unfold.
Oh, yeah. You guys were like, the epitome of the dating couple.
Oh, goodness.
Like, I just remember thinking, wow, like, if I could just be like that and find somebody like that.
It was so fun. And yes. So something really fun that we did, because those years were really special to us. And so when we got married, it was Christmas time. And so we asked our middle school kids to be part of our wedding by being the candlelighters. So there were probably like 20 of you guys, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
And Claire was one of them. Yes. And they came down from the stairs. And so it was kind of just like a little glow in the room. And they were not real candles for anyone who is nervous that we gave 20 yeah. candles to 7th and 8th graders.
Yes.
They were the fake, but they looked pretty.
Right.
And you guys all came down yes. during the beginning
so
of the wedding.
Sweet.
It was so sweet. So we have a little bit of history there.
Yeah. No, we do. We do.
It's so fun. So, yeah, it's been really awesome just to kind of have a front row seat, just watching your life unfold and knowing you in middle school and high school, and then just kind of following you via social media through your college days. Mm-hmm. And so when did you and Colt marry? How long have y'all been married?
We got married in 2008.
Okay.
So, yeah, wow. This fall will be 10 years.
That's so exciting. So,
yeah, we met at OBU and we were friends at first and then decided that we actually liked each other more than that. So, yeah.
That's so fun. And so how many years did you date your entire 4 years of college? Or
no, we started dating around Christmas time of junior year.
Okay.
Yeah. So for the first while, it was actually kind of, I wasn't too sure about him and he wasn't too sure about me. Kind of, we had our preconceived ideas about each other. But
yes.
then we played so much. We did music together and it formed into a friendship. And so, yeah, then we fell in love.
Oh.
Yeah.
So sweet. And you guys married once you graduated or did y'all get married during college?
We got married right after graduation in the
okay.
fall. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how long were you guys married before you had Duke, your firstborn?
We were married 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he is, let me do some math here, like 7-ish.
He is like, yeah, 6 and a half.
He'll okay.
be 7 in October.
Okay. And then sweet Nova, how old is she?
Yes. Sweet Nova. She is 4.
And then Veda?
And Veda is 15 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are just right in the throes of young kid life, motherhood.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I remember hearing, so you have been blogging for a little bit. How long have you been blogging? I know you always, you call yourself an occasional blogger. So.
Yes, it's so occasional, and it's continuing to be more and more occasional.
For sure, with kids.
I started blogging right after graduation.
Okay.
And it was kind of an attempt within our little friend group that we would all blog and then we would keep up with each other.
Aww.
And so that's kind of how it started. And then I just kept blogging and it was kind of fun and I liked just processing through writing, and some of it is just funny and fun and not important or serious, but then sometimes it is like part of my story and part of my journey. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun for me.
And your writing is like really a part of your wiring, because you are musical, you've written songs, you like to journal and blog, and so I mean, that's something, is that just a real outlet for you?
Yes, I feel like I'm not just sitting and thinking about things is not very productive for me. So I feel like processing either verbally or through journaling or songwriting or blogging, that is just really helpful for me.
That brings clarity.
Yes. I kind of can get to the end of a thought or a decision or an emotion or something that way.
Well, I think I remember maybe some of your older blogs, because now that you say that about keeping up with your college friends, I actually think I remember every now and then you'd link to one and they'd be kind of like fun little stories or like trips that you guys would take or, you know, things like that. But I really remember the series, I believe it was a series that you wrote on anxiety a few years ago. And for me, that was kind of the first time that I read your blog jumping into like an issue. It seemed like, and there probably were others that I didn't see.
But you're spot on. Yeah.
So that was kind of the first time you really were like, I'm going to take this to another level and like actually bare my soul a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt really compelled to do that. And it was still, I was just maybe a month-ish out of that. And so it still felt really new and tender, but I just felt really compelled to start sharing. And so I felt like I was kind of just being obedient to the Lord. And that was another good piece of the processing for me.
Because, now that you've mentioned that that's how you process, that probably was. So I do want you to take us back to just kind of how that season of anxiety unraveled and how you felt it. But I love that for you, that was actually all part of the healing and the processing, and that obedience was also God pressing into you that, like, this is obedience, but also you're going to be better for this because it's going to help you process it.
Yeah.
So would you say you had experienced anxiety like as a child, a teen, a college student, or any times in your life? Or was this something that just came completely out of the blue and shocked you?
I would say now that there are pieces that I can trace back and find and say, oh, that was actually anxiety, or that was actually the beginning of a panic attack.
Okay.
Or I can look back now, but at the time I would have said, absolutely not.
Okay.
It felt like there was no history of that. I didn't really feel like I had a grid for even understanding what that was like. I hadn't really, I just had no understanding of that. And so it felt very much out of the blue.
Yeah. So how did it come on? How did it present itself?
How did it happen?
Yeah.
The day. Well, the day, I will never forget the day it happened. So it was July 20th, 2012. That day was a fun day for two reasons. I was just going to release like a little few songs on an EP. I was just going to release this little EP of some of my songs, and I had never done that before. It was just a simple, the piano and me, just a simple thing. But I was always with our band, and so it was kind of the first time I was going to step out and do some of my songs. So I released that on July 20th, and also on July 20th, we were set to go on a triple date with some of our couple friends, and we'd all just had a baby. So there was just kind of this anticipation for this day. So that's kind of what I was walking into. And so we got to the date night, and we walk into Fuzzy's. We were going to get chips and queso before we went to a movie. As we're sitting there, I notice that this man walks in, and he's someone that I've known my entire life, but kind of a family friend, but not someone that I see on a daily basis at mm-hmm. all. And not somebody that I don't even know that he would recognize me. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I see him come in, and the reason this is kind of significant is because I had just had a dream about him the night before. Oh. And in the dream, he had died. And so I see him walk in, and so my senses are kind of alerted.
Yes.
The Lord speaks to me through my dreams a lot, and I felt like I was kind of at the beginning of that journey.
Oh, wow.
And so I didn't really have a whole lot of, I didn't have a lot of tools yet to know what to do with that. So basically all my senses were just heightened.
Yes.
So anyway, we finished that. I was
And you didn't
kind
say
of,
anything to him.
I didn't say
you
anything. Didn't.
It was just this overwhelming, weird feeling in your body of what
unsettling.
I do with this.
Unsettling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to walk up to him and
have you been to the doctor lately?
Right, tell him his doom. Yeah. It's like, I don't know what to do with this. So then we walked into the theater. We were seeing Batman, the Dark Knight Rises, I think was the one. And then here he comes.
The same man in the movies.
Same man.
Wow.
Into the movies. So at this point, I'm, you know, everything's kind of turned up a little bit more because the night before was the Aurora, Colorado. The Aurora, Colorado shooting. Yes.
Yes.
In the theater for
Batman.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I was typically a fearful worrier. I mean, that was kind of...
That was just your mode.
Your brain would go to... That was my normal mode. And so I was really on edge by this point.
So possibly even just the fact that y'all were going to a movie after such a pivotal thing possibly had you already kind of...
Right. It was kind of just the perfect cocktail of things.
Yes.
Yeah. I really started feeling all these things. Basically, like, I was shaky. My chest was burning. Mm-hmm. I felt like I couldn't, like, get a deep breath. My body was just, like, numb and tingly. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'm having a heart attack, you know?
Yeah.
So I walk out, try to just change the scenery, mm-hmm. get a drink of water, do something. But it just persisted. And I basically missed the whole movie, you know, because Colt was just totally like, what's going on? This just felt like totally strange. And so I was out, I was trying to just gather myself. You know, at the end of the movie, Colt came out and he was like, do you feel like there's something that you need to do or say to him? Or, and I didn't, but what it felt like was that I knew something was going to happen and I was the only one that could save everybody.
Oh.
And that sounds really dramatic.
Right.
But for anybody listening who's had a panic attack, it's totally spot on. I mean, that is kind of the mode that you're in. You're not really living in reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I felt like there was like this impending doom that I was in charge of fixing or saving or being the hero because I had this piece of knowledge or something. We went to dinner. We went on with our evening. I was able to function, but I still didn't feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel back to normal. So that was the night everything happened.
Okay. And how long did it take your body and your mind to recover from that?
Well, I really think it was just like sleeping it off and waking up the next morning. But within like an hour the next day, it was already coming back. Hmm. All of those symptoms, all of the panic. We actually went to the ER later that afternoon because I was like, I need a professional. I need somebody to figure out if something's wrong with my heart or something. Mm-hmm. I just was totally panicked, like pacing.
And Duke was a brand new baby.
Yeah, he was 9 months old.
Okay.
So, yeah, here we are going to the ER, and everyone was really nonchalant about it.
Okay.
I mean, the doctors, and I understand, you know, as a doctor, you don't want to act freaked out. That's not going to help your patient. So I understand that, but from my perspective, I was thinking, this is a really huge deal. Why is nobody freaking out about this like I am?
Mm-hmm.
But they gave me this... I think it was called, like, I think they called it a GI cocktail or something.
Okay.
It just kind of calmed my insides down. And
were they diagnosing panic attack from the start?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were like, sounds like you had a panic attack.
Okay. So they're
real,
like...
Real, just matter of fact, no big deal. Yeah. Which
so
I'm like, my whole world just turned upside down. Can you please give me more than that?
Right.
So it felt, it was kind of like, here's this. It will calm you down. And then you can go home. Yeah. And I still felt like, I don't really know what to do with this. Yeah. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So this persisted the same, all the same symptoms persisted the next day and the next day. Monday I actually went, so that was, all of it happened on a Friday. So Monday I went to the doctor I was seeing at the time. And, you know, I was just desperate for anything. And he, again, was very, you know, sometimes this happens. We deal with anxiety and sometimes it will just hit people. And so he gave me a prescription for Xanax. Hmm. And I just felt like walking out with this prescription, like, I don't really think this is the solution for me. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that medicine isn't a solution for people, mm-hmm. but for me in this instance, I knew there's something else going on here and mm-hmm. I really need to figure it out. I felt like there was just another layer to uncover and I wasn't quite landing on what that was. So the next day, it was bedtime, Duke was in bed. I was kind of just at my end, like, I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to try.
Because you're just walking around all day with this these feelings of panic or just tightness, waiting for the next terrible thing to happen.
Right. It really is. Yeah, you're just living kind of on the edge all the time. And I felt prompted that night to look through my journal of my old journal entries, which obviously was the Holy Spirit prompting me. And to give a little background at this point, I was kind of in an interesting spot spiritually. We had just been going to a new church that we still attend now, but we were just a couple years in, and there was just this hunger for more, and there was this piece of the puzzle that I felt like I was missing with the Lord, like. There was something that wasn't quite clicking in my heart. And I really felt like I was pretty capable and I was pretty self-reliant. You know, I make good choices and this is what happens. And I felt very much in control. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of in a cold place, I think, with the Lord of I wanted to have an experience with the Holy Spirit and I wanted to I was seeing them experience the Holy Spirit in really sweet ways, and I was just like, I want that. Mm-hmm. And so I was wanting it, but also kind of cold at the same time, thinking, well, why aren't you giving that to me?
And so, it sounds like kind of trying to manufacture things on your own as trying to desire it and then make it happen instead of resting and trusting and allowing.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'd always heard these things of, like, you know, you always hear that scripture of, when I'm weak, you're strong. And, you know, just this idea of being dependent on the Lord. And none of that really resonated with me. I kind of was like, I don't really know what that means for me in my life. You know, I know what that means in my head, but not really in my heart. So
you're looking through your journal.
Yeah. So I'm looking through my journal. I just start reading through all of these prayers and these things I'd been praying. And I'd been reading this book called A Praying Life by Paul Miller, and it was really great, just stirring up some really good thoughts. And so I was praying all these prayers about, Lord, teach me what it is to be weak. I know that I need to understand what it is to depend on you, to only have you. What does it mean that you're strong in my weakness? Teach me my need for you. Just all of this. And as I'm reading it, it was just like this light bulb moment of, that is what just happened. You know, the past 5 days, this is what just happened. You were totally out of control. There was no fix.
Yes.
No human could fix what I was dealing with. I couldn't even fix what I was dealing with. I was not in control of my mind, it felt. I wasn't in control of my body. And it was just this huge revelation in that moment. And in that moment, so I'm still feeling all the symptoms of anxiety and panic still. But in that moment, as I made that connection, I felt this rush of cold air, like, fall over my body. And all the symptoms were gone. And it is, to this day, like, when I tell the story, I'm just like, that really did happen. Like, it really did happen. And I felt completely healed in that moment. And it was like a Holy Spirit moment that I have never experienced. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So that kind of gave me the direction that I felt like I was looking for. Of, I know it's not about me taking pills. I knew that wasn't for me. I knew there was something deeper, and it was actually a spiritual issue that I felt like the Lord was trying to teach me. So,
and that makes sense, because as someone who wants to fix it, you know, had you just taken the prescription and the prescription worked, it would have been, in a sense, you taking care of your own problem.
Absolutely.
And not resting and trusting the Lord to take care of it, you know?
Right.
So that totally makes sense. It's the doctor couldn't fix it. The medicine couldn't fix it. Like, you needed to release, like, let go.
Right, right. Yeah, so I kept dealing with anxiety. It's not like it was gone forever.
Okay.
It still was something I had to work through. I went to counseling. My support system was amazing. My family and my community group and my church. So much just prayer and help and processing through all of that. And so it was still something that I was working through, but it felt like there's a purpose for this. You know, it's for my good, and it's for the good of other people. And so, yeah, it was quite a journey, and I feel so far away from it, in a sense, just because it's not something that I deal with, really. But I will sense it creeping in. But I feel like I know the things I need to do, and, you know, I've learned coping skills and things like that. So,
what are some of the most helpful things that you have learned or that you could pass on to someone who's listening who may be in the mix of that right now?
Yeah. Well, first, I would say to go to counseling. I would absolutely say that. And it's so hard, I think, to make that jump. Part of it for me was just, what do I say on the phone when I call?
Yeah.
Like, hi, my name's Claire, and I have anxiety, I think, or something. You know, I didn't even know what to do logistically. So, but just getting myself there was so helpful. And I would say just having someone to confide in and talk with. And if you're a processor like me, like a verbal processor, having someone to talk with, if it helps you to write your feelings out, just to do those things that you know are going to help you process those emotions.
Mm-hmm. What are some of, I've heard you mentioned some of the coping skills, like the 5-4-3-2-1 skill. And I actually think you wrote something about that recently, because I read one of your recent posts. How do you explain that for someone?
Okay. And I might mess up the order of them. Yeah. All the therapists out there will be like, no, that's not right. But five things you see, four things you can touch, three things you hear, two things you smell, one thing you taste, or something like that.
So it's tapping into your senses of what's going on right now.
Yes, because that's what a panic attack tries. That's what it's doing, is it's taking you out of reality and putting you in this situation that is not actually happening right now.
Okay.
Just looking around.
Yes.
And it sounds really basic and simple, but it kind of helps the spinning to stop. So anytime there's that beginning of a panicked feeling, or those same symptoms of anxiety start to creep in, that is one thing that's really helpful, just to stay grounded in the present moment.
That's good. And I've learned, I haven't dealt with anxiety long term, but I have just in recent years had a couple of, I would say, isolated situations where I suddenly felt a panicky feeling, like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I've processed through that and been working through that. But one thing that I've learned is you can't think two things at the same time. So if you're thinking about what's actually going on right now, in that moment, your brain's not thinking about the thing that you're panicked about. So the more, like you're saying, the more we can actually recognize what's going on in the here and now and recognize what's truth, like right now, we are, that truth is overshadowing that lie.
Right.
And I know that sounds real simple, and it's not always that simple for everyone. But for me, I felt like just taking captive my thoughts, you know, scripture talks about that. And when my thoughts start to swirl out of like things that aren't even happening right now, but that I might be nervous about, I can start to recognize that, like you're saying, pretty quickly, and then to go, okay, wait a minute, this is not a healthy train of thought, and to redirect those. And I know I'm only assuming music is good for you since you're a musician, but for me, music is so helpful, because when I have like worship music playing, my mind is soaking in that truth, and even I'll start singing along, and so then I'm using my mind and my voice to sing and to agree with those words, and so that's helpful as well.
Have you
found things like that to be helpful for you?
Well, and just what you're saying about thinking, you can't think two things. I think having either a set thought or a set scripture that you're ready to use to replace those patterns of thinking with. That's so good. As soon as you start spinning into, well, what if this happens and what if this happens? And as soon as you notice that, then you just replace it with something else. Mm-hmm. And I remember there being days when I was just in the thick of this and it was hard work. I mean, I remember going to bed mentally exhausted because it was just like, it was a mental workout every day to keep my thoughts away from things that could happen, terrible outcomes, worst case scenario, what if this and what if this. It was really hard work and it was exhausting, but what you're doing is you're building these new patterns, that new habits, you know, and it's so worth it.
It is. It's like a muscle memory, you know, anytime we start to work a new muscle or, you know, bring something new into our daily routine, even walking more than we normally do, like there's some soreness and there's just retraining our body, and our mind is exactly the same way, So I do think sometimes as women, and especially if we have the personality of being a fixer, like we may go one day and think, I went all day thinking about, you know, I had that scripture in my pocket or on my phone lock screen and I looked at it 20 times and this should be it. And so you found that it's not necessarily the case. It was day after day. Do you remember for you kind of how long it took to just repair that thinking?
I feel like it was hard work for probably a year.
Okay.
And then after that point, it just, I think it was a little bit more natural and instinctive to go, oh, I'm doing it again. Mm-hmm. And the redirecting wasn't as difficult. So yeah, I would say probably after a year, I felt a little more in control of where my thoughts were going.
Okay. And tell me how this impacted marriage, just learning new things, how, you know, coping skills as a couple.
Right. He did not have any, I mean, just like me, we didn't have any experience with this, with mental illness in general. And so this was a learning curve for both of us. And he was just so steady, and that's who he is anyway. But during this, he was just there and sending me text throughout the day, sending me scriptures, praying for me over the phone, sending prayers through text, constantly sending encouragement, and just very steady. And so it was a really sweet time because I felt like I'm clinging to the Lord in a new way, and then I felt like I was also clinging to Him in a new way.
That's cool.
And he was, and I think that it's benefited him even just in the understanding of that and knowing how to walk with somebody in that, and that's something we've both really learned.
I think that's such a sweet byproduct of this that you never would have expected.
Right.
You know, just like with anything, and obviously, you know, we chose to talk about this because this is the Uniquely Beautiful Stories.
Yes.
And when we look back on our darkest seasons, we can typically see these unusual, beautiful gifts. And that's a surprising gift right there, just having a beautiful season with your husband and getting to learn how to lean on him more. I would assume, since you mentioned your personality is more of like, fix it, be in control, I can handle this, like that probably poured over into marriage a little, and you didn't even recognize it, that like maybe just not depending on him as much or thinking in certain things you could be self-sufficient. And so that, I can totally see how that would take your marriage to just a sweeter depth as the Lord allowed him to really carry your burdens and to partner with you in this, like just to bring that intimacy.
Yeah. And I would say with that, just accepting help, receiving the prayers and receiving all of that from people. You know, I think I was just in, it was such a painful spot that I was just like open hands, like I'll take anything, you know. So any person that would send a sweet text or at church, I felt like I was walking down for prayer, like every day, every Sunday I was walking down, and I was open and willing for just any help. And so I think, and that's not to say that it's easy to do, but I think that it is, the payoff is worth it. It's just being willing to have people come alongside you in the journey and not do it by yourself. Because I think that is what the enemy would love, is to isolate you, especially in this kind of situation.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like that's very common. I think I see more than your response, I see women who are almost maybe embarrassed to talk about it or feel like people are going to look down on them or feel weak if they, admit to it.
Right.
And I'm really thankful that you're setting this example of the opposite, like receive that help, open your hands to it, open your heart to it, be willing to be vulnerable. And obviously that was probably all just a part of, you said you started this by saying writing this blog. I mean, it was like a couple days into it or weeks into it, and that was part of God's your obedience to God.
Right.
And did that open doors for people to start talking to you about it? It was
almost
like, I can't take it back now.
Yeah, I've already said it. Yeah, and I mean, my blog is like a nothing blog. I mean, it's just like, you know, my family and my friends, you know, read it. It's not a big deal. But what happened was I just would get these messages from people I knew really well or people that were just kind of acquaintances on Facebook saying, like, wow, I'm really glad that you shared that because I've actually been dealing with something or I have dealt with something or I've been dealing with this my whole life. Whatever the case, I just was so surprised at how many people then reached out to me to say, me too, basically.
Yeah.
And so that was another piece of just seeing the good come from the evil, and just such a picture. This story for me is such a picture of that whole idea that, you know, what Satan means for evil, the Lord means for good.
Absolutely.
And so something that could have just really twisted my life by the grace of God and the community that was around me, it did not happen like that. And hopefully people felt understood and felt like there was some compassion in their direction. And
I'm sure they did.
So that was like such a joy to get those messages. And it felt like, okay, I'm not like doing this in vain. I'm not suffering alone. This is for the good of other people.
Yes. And you became a safe place, you know, for people to, maybe someone who had not told anyone yet, like you're mentioning for our listeners, tell someone, invite someone into this, talk to a counselor.
Right.
You know, I see all over your story, just the importance of community and being vulnerable and sharing life. But there may have been women who read your blog, had never had that yet. They were struggling with it alone. So you became that first kind of safe place. And then I'm sure from there you were able to encourage them kind of on a journey to health.
And I remember even passing along my counselor's name and number to several people that were just in this area.
Yeah.
So it was really an honor actually to be able to share that in the tiny moment that it was shared with these people, just in a couple of exchanges over, you know, Facebook message or something.
Yeah.
It was really an honor to be a part of the story.
So I'm wondering how motherhood, Duke was 9 months when the first attack came on. So as you look back, do you feel like motherhood played into this perfect storm, or do you think they were completely unrelated, or how did that
think they were definitely related. Yeah. I really think looking back that I did have postpartum depression with Duke, and I don't really even know that I would say it was completely gone until maybe he was one.
Okay.
Until I was done breastfeeding. I really think that was kind of the moment that the fog lifted.
Okay.
Yeah,
so all
I
those
think
extra
it,
hormones from breastfeeding,
yeah.
the extra leftover hormones from pregnancy,
right.
you know, just that whole newness and all of that settled on you, but you didn't recognize it
at
first until the major panic attack. And
maybe
because of your personality, you were handling it.
Yes.
You were doing the thing.
I was doing as I knew to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it did contribute, and I would describe it as just kind of this... The postpartum depression, I really feel like it was just kind of a heavy fog that just every month got a little bit lighter, a little bit lighter. I could see a little bit further. But once I was done breastfeeding, I really feel like that was a release. I think there was a lot of control in that that felt unhealthy. I think it, I'm just such a... I want to be out. I want to be with people.
Yes.
I want to say yes to everything. I want to go, go, go. That was really tricky for me in the beginning of motherhood to just slow down and be in and have to say no to some things and not be around as many people. So that was hard, but then I think the nursing on top of it, Duke had really bad reflux. Mm. We had to walk around with towels, normal bath towels.
Oh, goodness.
And for his reflux. And so that just made me feel even more like, I need to stay home. Mm-hmm. This is not something, nobody wants this at their house. And, you know, like,
right.
So I think just feeling that isolation and, I definitely think that was a contributor to that.
And what did that look like with your next two? Was it something that after, mm-hmm. so you weaned Duke and now you're just kind of doing the regular toddler life and then it's time to get pregnant with the next one, or you get pregnant with the next one? And was there kind of like an apprehension leading into it? Were you connecting all those dots yet? Or was it after Nova came and then you feel that again? Or, you know, what did that look like?
I was definitely, I had connected it and I had thought, okay, I need to buckle up, get ready. I kind of was just preparing for another season of that. Mm-hmm. And what was a surprising thing about her was just that she would not nurse. Mm-hmm. And she was also 13 days late. So I feel like she, yeah. So
she's her own.
Yeah, to everybody listening, that tells you a lot about her personality. But it was really surprising to me because I thought, well, I know how to do this.
Right.
And again, those same thoughts.
Right.
I know how to do this. What's the problem? Right. I'm doing everything right. And this must be her fault. You know, what's going on? And so we did the whole lactation route and I went and visited a lactation consultant a few times, mm-hmm. and did all the gadgets and tubes, and it was just such a mess. And that was also not allowing me to live life either, because it was almost a two-person job to nurse her, but it certainly wasn't something I could do out in public with a toddler running around.
Yes.
So it just required a lot of being at home and a lot of time, and then not really a whole lot of results. Like, we weren't really seeing her gain weight. So it was already this newborn season that is really hard for me, but then she wasn't gaining well and it wasn't working. And so that was a shock because I kind of thought, oh, we've already done this before.
Right.
Nursing will be easy.
Right.
That will be something I can be in control of. And it was not.
And so you had a moment. I remember you telling me that there was just a very clear moment where the Lord released you mm-hmm. from all that work and all of that. And I know as a mom myself, there's so much mom guilt that comes along with basically any decision that we make,
right.
if we let it,
really
you know,
anything. Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world where there's so many options, but people get real prickly about their choice.
Yes.
And they can make you feel like a bad mom if you know, don't agree. And there's just so much pressure out there for moms, and I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can only imagine with something like breastfeeding, we can take that really personally and like, this is
right.
their... this is how they're going to grow, and this is how God made it, and he designed my body to produce this. And
right.
so for you, I would love for you to walk us through that process when the Lord released you from that and you felt real clarity.
Yeah. Well, I remember the night I had gone to our book club that we have every summer with our church, and I just was feeling so torn because I felt like I was missing out on some of the joy of her, just enjoying her as a baby. And then also poor Duke is like, I'm over here too, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just felt like this is not feeling right. It isn't really progressing in a way that felt like it was productive.
And how old was she at this time?
Probably 5 or 6 weeks.
Okay. So gosh, you had,
yeah.
you put in
so
some time there.
I had really tried. And I went to book club and I don't remember what we were talking about, but I think we ended up talking about the relationship with our spouses and how sometimes it is just such a joy to be able to say, I don't know what to do in this situation. I want you to just tell me what to do because you have a different perspective. You have a different set of eyes.
Mm.
You know me in ways that maybe I don't even know me.
Mm.
And so I just remember calling Colt on the way home and I was like, I want you to tell me exactly what to do.
Hmm.
And I'm going to do it because I don't feel like I have the mental or emotional clarity to make this decision. Because no mom wants to say, yep, and now I'm done nursing you. You know, it
right.
feels hard,
yeah.
especially the first time. that you're making that decision. And so I asked him and he said, okay, then we're done. We're not going to do
just
it
like
anymore.
That.
Yeah. So obviously he was ready. Yes. I think it was emotionally so draining for me. And so I felt so free in one sense, but then also really frustrated that it had come to this. Because it did kind of feel like, you know, that's my right. Like, I should be able to nurse my baby. This is how God made me. I kind of went through a season with the Lord just kicking and screaming. Mm. Like, are you really good? Do you really want good things for me? This is such a simple thing. Why couldn't you have fixed this or healed this or made it work in some miraculous way? I don't understand. So that was a hard season. And I told myself I would pump as long as I could. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, exclusively pumping is absolutely terrible. So that lasted about 2 weeks and then I was done with that. Mm-hmm. So I was on to formula and I felt like you're saying, that mom guilt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like when I was out making the bottle and, you know, it just was like this feeling inside of me. I wanted to like say, she wouldn't nurse, so that's why I'm doing bottles, but I had plenty of milk, but she wouldn't get it. You know, I felt like I had to give this announcement of why I'm feeding my baby a bottle, and nobody had actually made me feel that way. Yeah. This was all my own inner dialogue of what I expected of myself and just what was going on inside. And so it was a really hard adjustment to let that go and to kind of come to the realization that I don't get to know why everything is the way that it is, and I don't get to know why certain things happen in life, but there was a lot of great things that came from that season, and it prepared me for Veda, who also did not nurse.
Oh my goodness.
And I really was like, this is getting kind of funny. Like, wow, she also won't. And these were both like, they were both big babies.
Yeah.
So I think the idea is that, it's hard maybe if you have a preemie.
Right.
It's hard maybe if... But no, these were huge babies, 9 and 10-pound babies. So they should have been, you know, using quotes, should have been fine to do it. But for whatever reason, they weren't. And so quickly with Veda, within 5 days when we went to the doctor and he was concerned and said, she's not gaining well. You need to go see lactation. And I was like excited. I was like, great, that's our answer. And so we just went home, I got formula, and we moved on, and it was fine. And bottles were enjoyable in a way that nursing just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. There was just so much more freedom.
Yeah.
There was less thinking, planning when I'm gone, having the ounces for people. Oh no, what if they don't take a bottle? There was so much less planning with it. And I really enjoyed that. And so I can actually say now that I would choose that again in a heartbeat. Mm. Like, I would choose to bottle feed because for me, it kind of just lightens the load for me. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that's always something that you hear, because I think you're supposed to really enjoy nursing and choose that. And so... So with Veda, I felt free to do it, and so I'm thankful that I had that journey with Nova.
So. I'm so glad you mentioned all that part of your story, because I even can think of a couple of women in the past year or so that I've had conversations with, because you don't hear a lot of women today talking about the benefits of not breastfeeding. But there are women still exactly like you that tried it or didn't even feel drawn to it for whatever reason.
Right.
And there can just be that feeling, and like you were saying, it's like almost a fake, it's not real, but a feeling of judgment when you're out in the world and you're making a bottle and it's all the inner dialogue.
Right.
I doubt that anyone is actually looking at them sideways or thinking, what a terrible mom. But in our heads, we think, well, this isn't what the quote best is for my baby, or this isn't what everyone else is doing. And so we put all that mom guilt on ourselves. So I'm really glad that you spoke to that. And again, I just think it's so interesting how the Lord used such a hard and pretty dramatic situation in your life to bring you to what he knew was going to be the most beautiful way for you to raise your kids, and the way he knew that you needed that freedom and you needed to let yourself off the hook and to enjoy your girls in a way that you weren't necessarily able to enjoy Duke. It didn't take away from him. Right. He was your first and you didn't know any different. And
right.
He got all the attention.
Yes, yes.
But God knew that for your girls, you needed yeah. to give yourself that freedom.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it also spoke to just my value of hard work and to be a hard worker and to be seen as a hard worker. And I think with Nova, there was this sense that if I'm feeding her a bottle, it's almost like people will see me and think, well, she just didn't work hard enough to nurse her. It was probably something on her end. She just couldn't handle it. That is just kind of the dialogue that I had created in my head, that that's what people were thinking. And to me, that was a devastating thought, to think that I could be viewed as somebody who wasn't willing to work hard for good things or for things that were worth it. And so I really had to just change my perspective on that and kind of release my own judgments of myself.
Wow. Well, I'm going to take a shift to a completely different topic before we close, because on this podcast, because we're talking about, you know, our God stories and how God interrupts our life, a lot of times we will talk about how God speaks to us or how God leads us. And I always want our listeners to have clarity on that. If there's someone listening who doesn't hear God's voice very regularly or isn't sure if it's God or if it's not, and of course this could be like a 3-hour conversation, just this one thing. But I think something that's so cool and somewhat unique about your story is that you do see and hear God a lot in dreams.
Yeah, it has been so fun. I would say that I have learned to just pay attention in general. I've just learned to pay attention. And I write all my dreams down the second I have them. If you don't write them down, either right when you wake up, if it's in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning, then you're really not going to remember them. They're just faint and they just gradually fade away. So I write everything down. Not everything is something that I need to act on or say anything to anybody about. Sometimes it's just maybe the Lord is prompting me to pray for somebody. Sometimes I will have a dream, just like the anxiety story. I'll have a dream about somebody and then like I'll see them the next day. So that has prompted me in those cases to just maybe reach out to them and say, hey, the Lord put you in my dream last night. Is there anything I can pray for you about? And a lot of times that has come back with, oh yeah, this thing is going on. Oh, wow. And would you pray about this for me? And I feel like in general, just interceding, just different ways to intercede and to pray on behalf of other people. And even in my own life, like I feel like there have been dreams that I've had that have given me direction and clarity on things, on like steps I need to take or something I need to do, and I had a dream about it, and then I felt confirmed, like if I was kind of on the fence about something. I think that it often maybe is perceived that that's really like this mystical thing and new agey idea, but you know, the Lord spoke in the Bible in dreams, and he still does, and it's not always this really mystical feeling. It's just my normal dreams that I'm having, but I'm just choosing to pay attention to them. So I think in general, paying attention is kind of a key to figure out where is the Lord speaking to me and how is the Lord speaking to me.
Yes, I do. I agree with that. And I'm going to link a couple of examples of scriptures in the Bible. There's many, but I'm going to link those up in the podcast in case anyone is curious or doubtful or wondering, you know, like, but I think that's key. What you said is to clue in, pay attention. God made us. He made each of us with our personalities and with our spiritual gifts, and we're all unique. And so he is clearly going to speak to us in that unique way that we need and that he knows that we're paying attention to. And so if you find just some repetitive thing in your life, pay attention to that, because a lot of times in our humanness, we want to write it off as, well, that's quote random or that's kind of weird, but coincidental. Yes. But I found more often than not, it's the Holy Spirit trying to get our attention. And of course he's going to use something that gets our attention because he knows how we're wired and he knows what, you know, turns our head or what our heart is inclined towards. And so I'm a huge believer of that as well. And I sometimes will have dreams. Sometimes God speaks to me in pictures in my mind, and I will just be going about my day, and he'll give me this super clear picture of something in my head. And years ago, I would kind of, like you said, move past it and not pay attention and think, right. that was random, or I haven't thought about that person in 5 years,
right.
or that's interesting. And then I would just move on and not act on it.
Mm-hmm.
But in recent years, I've learned to dial into that. And if it's a random person that I have not thought about in years, just to pray for that person real quick.
Right.
Sometimes I'm not as good about following up. I need to be better about texting or following up or just saying, hey, God brought you to my mind and I prayed for you, but is there anything specific?
Right.
And like you said, I mean, often it's like they're in the middle of something that
right.
I never would have known about.
Right.
There's no way I would have known that. But
right.
the Lord, for whatever reason, chose me to be an interceder for that
right.
situation.
Yeah, and it does
it's
involve
so humbling.
Risk. And sometimes I will reach out to somebody and they're like, nope, I'm good. You know, and you're like, okay,
okay,
that's great. That's fine. But I just know, well, I'm being obedient and I'm just doing... I'm doing what I think that the Lord's asking me to do. And yeah, you're so right.
And
paying
there's
attention.
never any fault or harm in praying
right.
for somebody, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
There's no harm
yeah,
done
it's
in that.
A win-win.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, I love that. And I know we could talk for a really long time just about spiritual gifts and the way God uses them and the way he speaks to you. But I definitely wanted to spend a second on that, mm-hmm. on your giftings and the way that you have worked specifically over the past few years to dial into them and to learn more and not, like you said, blow it off or...
Right.
But you're paying attention to dreams. And I also like the fact that you mentioned not all of them are a big thing. Like, I think...
Right.
Sometimes if we have enough of those where it just was a, quote, random dream and nothing really came of it, we might... talk ourselves into not paying attention to the ones in the future.
Right.
We might go, well, I texted that person and it was kind of weird. She was like, no, I'm good. And so
right.
that could actually make us dismiss future,
mm-hmm.
you know, encounters like that. And so I'm really grateful that you mentioned that. Just
yes.
the persistence and paying attention and
mm-hmm.
and then just going on with your day.
Yeah, yeah. Moving on. Yeah.
Well, the last thing I want to chat about, I think we could talk for hours because we have a lot of similar interests and similar stories,
yes.
but is your songwriting. That's been a really fun surprise for you, I know. In the past, I mean, you've been musical. You went to school as a music major.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember you leading worship and playing the piano at our church. You played in the shack with our
yes.
middle schoolers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been a part of your wiring. Your mom's musical, your sister, your brother. I think your dad.
Yeah.
Whole
yeah.
family.
Everybody. Everybody is.
But recently you have... begin to just do your own more writing and mm-hmm. singing and by yourself and then with your sister. So
yes.
share with us what God's been doing lately.
Yeah, it really all kind of started last summer at book club. Book club, there are a lot of stories that come out of a book club. Yeah. We were reading Nothing to Prove by Jenny Allen. Yes.
Good
which
book.
Is such a
so
great
good.
Book. And I remember reading about, I think she was talking about a friend and maybe even talking about herself in this instance, but talking about this fear of self-promotion, of doing the things that you feel led to do, but then being so concerned that you will come off a certain way that you're totally hindered from doing them for fear of looking like you're promoting yourself or looking like you're arrogant or whatever the things are that you can concoct in your mind that people might think of you. It's this fear of man thing that we all deal with to some extent. And
yes.
so I just remember reading that and thinking, that is so me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I always love hearing clips from different musicians of what they're writing
mm-hmm.
and I've always wanted to do it, but I was so scared to come off a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, well, it's not worth the risk. Then I just won't share.
Mm.
And I really felt like the Lord was pressing in last summer about, I want you to be obedient to me in this. Couldn't get it out of my head. And I really thought about it. And I texted kind of my a few friends,
mm-hmm.
a core group of friends. And I was just like, I'm just letting you know. I'm going to start doing this. And it feels weird, and it feels kind of out there, like I'm saying, look at me, but I really feel like the Lord is leading me to do it and
mm-hmm.
to share the stories and share the songs that are in my heart
mm-hmm.
and that have come from my life. So I did, and that first one that I posted was like shaking and pressing post, and,
yes.
you know, and it felt so scary, like I'm just laying my heart out there in this really different way way scarier than just writing a blog post or something. Mm-hmm, it was like, no, this is my music. You know, I felt really vulnerable, but each time it has just gotten easier and easier, and it's just such a joy to be able to do it. And when I look back and think, oh, it's been a year, it's kind of, it's just surprising to me that it has already this far in, and I feel like the comfort of the Lord's asking me to, and I would hope that it is an encouragement to other people, and that's enough. You know, that's enough of a reward if one person is encouraged or feels understood. So yeah, it's been a fun journey, and my sister and I write together, and we write more on the silly side or the kind of happy, peppy side of things. So that's kind of a fun side thing to do with her as well.
And you guys have started, you performed at the arts festival, and you guys have really started kind of putting it out there more.
Yes. Yeah. We just in the past few months have decided we need to set some dates that we get together and we practice on purpose, leave space to actually write and tweak things and have time to be creative and all of that.
Well, I love it. And your band is Marianne. It's what you and Carly are called together. Yes. So I will link to that because people can find y'all on Instagram. They can follow your page.
Yes.
And then for your personal stuff, they would follow you
at Claire Westbrook.
Okay. So I'll put all of that in our show notes and your blog. And you know what? I'll also do like a special link to the anxiety series.
Yes.
In case anyone wants to look back on that and just read the journey that you've talked about today.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, I'm so thankful for you coming today and sharing your heart.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's been so fun. And I know you also are a major Enneagram enthusiast.
Oh, yeah. So I'm obsessed.
We had hoped and thought we'd talk about it today, and then we decided we need to do an entire Enneagram episode. So, listeners, this is breaking news coming soon.
Breaking news. I feel like we need a sound bite to go with
that. I agree. There you go. You're the musician. So there we go.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're going to have an Enneagram episode coming up. Claire and I are going to nail down a date, and we're going to have another wonderful Enneagram enthusiast join us. So it'll be kind of a little small panel. And I've had so many people just recently kind of get into it, get curious about it. And so this will be maybe Enneagram 101, and then depending on the response, we can just keep it going.
Yeah, we can go all the way up to 200 if
so that's coming soon, listeners, so stay tuned for that. Before we wrap up, Claire, today I want to ask you, what is making your life beautiful currently?
Well, I would say the Enneagram. I hate to beat a dead horse, but I do love it, and it has really changed my life in some ways. So that is making my life beautiful. Something new this is a really small thing, but Colt started bringing me coffee every morning in bed because I am such a terrible morning person. I am just a bear when I wake up. And I've really wanted to figure out, how can I enjoy my mornings?
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a morning person. And so he had the thought of, like, what if I brought you coffee in bed
so
and
precious.
Just, you kind of had a second. I have my journal and my devotional, whatever I'm doing, I have it next to me, and I do that first thing in the morning, and that has been a really sweet thing.
I love that, and that's not small. That's actually
a
big deal. Yeah. I'm a non-morning person as well, so the waking up early and then the husband serving and just, you know, helping you with that. That's so precious.
Yeah, I will hear the little... the setting down of the cup on my nightstand, and that's kind of how I wake up, and I smell the coffee, and it's just such a better way for me to wake up than waking up to all of the needs of
the chaos,
the children.
Oh man, that's a whole thing.
Yes.
Oh, well, I love that. Yeah. My husband leaves ridiculously early, and I don't need to get up that early.
Your coffee
and so,
would be really cold.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, or I'd just be mad that I'm up that early. So that can't work for us, but I may have to think about a way that I could, like, set a timer or something, make that work for me.
Yes. Yeah. You totally should.
Because I do love that idea.
It is really helpful.
Oh, well, thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
It's been so much fun. And listeners, thank you for spending your time with Claire and I. We sure hope that this episode has been an encouragement to you. We hope you will go out today and live your one uniquely beautiful story.
Thank you for listening to Uniquely Beautiful Stories with Heather McAneer. Share this podcast with a friend and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now go live your own story.